our meeting. We were scheduled to convene at 1:30. But as we all know, during these special sessions, meeting time becomes a premium. We do have a couple of pieces of information Paul would like to share, and then we have an orientation that's been prepared to compare the differences in the PERS actuarial bills, the concepts that have been floated to date. So, Paul, if you bring the committee up to date on change.
Okay. Mr. Chair, you did hear a discussion from the Division of State Lands about a legislative concept in regard to distribution of the earnings. We looked at a bill from the House that would require a 5% minimal distribution annually. So that is before you as a legislative concept for your information. The second piece of information is a discussion you had yesterday concerning the size of firms and how many firms there are in the state. I did go to what's called the County Business Patterns, which is a U.S. Census Bureau publication, annual publication, that measures establishments. And establishment is an economic activity in a single location, so it doesn't necessarily mean companies. For example, a McDonald's franchise would be a single establishment, so you may have a number of those kinds of chains in the numbers. But if you look in that census data, the County Business Patterns Table 2 shows you that the number of establishments in the state in 2000 was about 100,000, 100,645. Over half of those, 56,000, were 1 to 4 employees. About 19,000 were 5 to 9 employees. So about two-thirds are 9 or fewer employees of establishments. Those larger size, those over 1,000 are 65 different establishments. And those 500 to 999, there's 117 establishments. If you look on the other side of that sheet there, Table 3, shows you how the about 1.34 or 1.36 million employees are distributed. There's about 126,000 of them who work in those establishments with 1,000 or more. And those with 1 to 4 employees, there's about 93,000 of the 1.4 million are employed.
Any questions for Paul on the annual payroll by class size for employers? Thank you, Paul. We have also some housekeeping issues that we need to attend, do we not?
Yes.
In order to keep our bills active in the committee, we've received the bills, but we haven't opened public hearings on these bills. So we're going to conduct some tap-tap hearings to House Bill 4059, 4056, 4052, and 4050A, but we'll do that at the end of today's meeting. Just to put the folks here today on notice, if they have any comments that they'd like to make on those bills, we will be opening public hearings on those as we go. And then we do have a slide presentation, a PowerPoint presentation on simplified, PERS benefits simplified. I really like the title there.
Open session on 1021.
We will, in fact, open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1021. Question, Senator.
Where are our Democratic members?
I don't know. I'm certain that they were notified of the hearing. They may be in coffee.
Thank you.
Mr. Yates, whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Welcome.
Mr. Yates with Legislative Evidence. Prior to introduce some of the concepts that are in these bills, and I've headed this first benefit simplified, which many people would call an oxymoron, I'm sure. And I think I might count myself among those. And the thing that I want to make sure is that that this is simplified and that it grosses over a lot of very complex questions. Now, most, it doesn't require rocket science, there's nothing like that, but there are a lot of different factors that affect the benefits that an individual retiree will receive, and it's not possible to consider all of those looking at some general analysis of the options that are available. So to begin simplifying, what I do first of all is start with basically money match. So what's driving benefits is the account balance of the member. What I've got here is basically a simplified growth in member account balances. The lighter bar there, I guess it's green, represents the Tier 1 people under the 8% guarantee, essentially. So that's growing at 8% per year in the diagram. It could grow faster, but it's guaranteed to grow at least 8%. The blue line represents a, you know, a one possibility of what might happen with the variable account. What happens there is in the first year you get a 10% reduction and then a more rapid rate of growth than in the normal so that it catches up by the end of the period. Again, looking at the variable and those changes in account balances just complicates the way in which these benefits are determined. So I'm looking only at the normal where you've got growth in every year. So that's the first sort of simplification. The next question that moves into the moving from account balances to benefits is the actuarial equivalency factors. And these are developed by the actuary for PERS. They're based on mortality tables. They're also based on the assumed average rate of return to the fund. And there may be other elements that are in there, but those are the two dominant ones. And the one that we're really concerned with at this point is changes in the mortality tables and the effect that those might have on benefits. And so what I've done here for the example is to assume that there is something like a factor which can be applied to the account balance to determine what your benefit is. So in the first case, I'm assuming the actuarial table to produce a number 0.00716. All right. And then I'm assuming that new mortality tables are adopted, and after the adoption, life expectancies are 10% longer on average, so that on average, the factor would drop by 10%. So then the question is, what effect would this have on benefits? We can see that in the next diagram. Basically, they're reduced by 10%. Given the assumptions I've made that actual beginning balance of $100,000 produces benefits of $716 under the normal system, and just slightly over $600 under the new mortality table, new actuarial adjustment factors. And this is what would happen, essentially, if that just took effect. So the question then is, what actions can the legislature essentially take to influence the way in which these benefits behave over time? And one is to take no action, to just let the tables take effect. A second option is in the original bill. Which essentially, the way I refer to it is it establishes a floor so that your benefits can't go down after the new tables are adopted relative to what they were. Now, you don't really have that guarantee. I mean, let's talk again, just back up for a second. Suppose you're in the variable system and your account balance drops way down. Your benefits could go down. But it guarantees that the actuarial factors used are not going to reduce your benefits in the next year. Then you will receive some amendments, and we're working hard to try and make sense of these, to implement a five-year, what it's called
Mr. Chair. Is the benefits...
Senator Charles,
Is that the multi-segment approach? Benefits with floor?
No. That's the approach that's in House Bill 4057. It's the last one in the series here, the segment.
Okay.
And Mr. Yates, I think the wear away is a relatively... How did we derive the name for that?
That, I think, we can lay at PERS doorstep.
Okay. And it refers to the idea that the, there's a diminishment of the benefits?
I suspect, yes.
Okay.
That's the right way to spell where?
I know, I know. I did it right one place.
Did you?
So what we want to do is look at each one of these options. And if you just say no action, here's what happens to your benefits, and that's just the 10% reduction. And that doesn't seem to me to be a very good way to present this. But what I've tried to do is say, okay, how can I present this in a way that kind of makes some sense to it? And so what I want to look at is the growth that occurs in your benefits each year under each of these systems. But what I'm starting out with would be the benefits that you get, basically, the growth in those benefits under the system after you've implemented the new mortality table. And then you add to that what you've lost, and where you end up is where you would have been had you not adopted the new mortality table. Okay? All right, so if we look at no action then, the light blue, green or whatever it is essentially the benefits, and it's hard to show negatives with bar charts, but anyway, what's happening in the first year there is that your benefits are actually reduced, so the amount of the reduction in those benefits is in fact your loss. In the next year, benefits do go down. They would have gone up, so the sum of those two is your loss. And then as you move out, once benefits under the new system, under the new mortality tables, rise above where they were in their first year, then you see the loss as an addition or a difference between where the benefits get you and where you would have been without the change in the mortality tables. And basically, once you get to this point, again, the loss is about 10% of your benefits under the assumptions that I've used, where you've got a constant rate of growth in your balance. Okay, if you look at the floor then, come on, babe. What it does is the benefits under the new tables are the same as they would have been under the old tables, so there's no change, there's no growth, there's no loss. They're exactly the same. In that second year, again, you don't get the loss portion of that bar. What you lose is the difference between what your benefits were in the previous year and where they would have gone without the change in the mortality tables. But there's no reduction in your benefits, so that's what I'm referring to as a floor, kind of. It doesn't let those go down. And then once you move into year three, year 2005 and on out, it's exactly the same as the previous example with no action. Now, if you compare the next question is the five-year wear away, spelled differently this time. and what you need at some point.
Can't we get an apostrophe into this word somewhere? A hyphen?
This is not the right way.
Please proceed there.
What you need is a rule of some sort, and this is part of the problem in drafting. How much to leave up to PERS and how much to specify essentially in the law. What I've assumed here is simply that you're going to add back some portion of the loss in each year. So if we go back to that first graph, these are the losses. And what I'm saying under the five-year wear away is that you essentially add back all of this loss in the first year so that there's no loss. In the next year, you add back 80%. 60%, 40%, 20%, and then by 2008, there is no add back. The retiree essentially has the full reduction in their benefits. Okay, so what that looks like then is you can see the blue portion or the loss portion of these benefits is much smaller, at least in the first few years. By the time you get out to 2008, it's the same as the other diagram. And we can look at both the benefits and at the losses. If you look at the benefits, again, under the floor program, the first case, you see the benefits being held constant for the first 2 years, then beginning to grow. And with the five-year wear away and the adding back of some of those losses, the benefits are growing throughout that period and substantially more. If you look at the loss, it shows you the same sort of thing. Under the floor plan, the reduction in benefits is much larger in those first 4 years. By the fifth year, it evens out. It's the same thing, whichever plan. So if you happen to retire 5 years after the change in the mortality tables, in either case, your benefits are reduced by the full reduction. What I'm assuming is a 10% reduction. Now, if we go to the segmented approach, which is in House Bill 4057, again, this is a very simplified. The question is how you divide up the segments. And my numbers here are very simplified. What I assume would really happen in some sense, and maybe Purge can speak to this sometime later, is that you end up at the time of retirement with some account balance, whatever that is. And then that balance that exists at that time would be allocated somehow to the various periods that you worked under each mortality table. Well, I've made a very simple assumption here is that all of your balance up to the point where the tables change is under one segment, and everything you earn thereafter is under the next segment. Very simple. So if you do that, this is what happens essentially. Your losses are, your reductions in your benefits are very small. In this year, essentially, all of your history is prior to the change in the tables and subject to the factors that were in effect before the tables changed. Only a very small 1 year, essentially, of earnings is subject to the new lower actuarial factors. As you move out over time, gradually that loss, as more and more of your income is in the second segment with the change in the tables, the loss grows. But you can see, if you recall, the height of the loss out here by 2008 is much less under this segment. And we can compare those, again, looking at the benefits to the individual. They're higher in every case under the segmented approach, and you have essentially, in these years, these early years, a step up from the floor to the five-year wear away to the segmented approach. As you begin to move out to these later years, you can see the segmented approach is starting to move substantially above the other approaches. By 2008, it doesn't make any difference between the floor and the five-year wear away, but the segmented approach is still substantially above. Again, looking at the losses, you have the same sort of comparison. The losses under the segmented approach are much less. And you know, I've dealt with this from the perspective kind of the employee. There's two perspectives. One is the employer, the other is the state in terms of savings under these programs. So where I'm talking about losses being higher, the other side, you know, the other hand, on the other hand, as the economists say, the savings to the state are higher. And that's, you know, those are two, it's a fixed-size pie, so to speak, is the question mark. Okay, that's all I have.
Questions from the committee? And welcome, Senator. Glad to see that you could sit in. Any questions from the committee for Mr. Yates? You're looking out over the folks that are assembled here to listen to this testimony. I can tell from here who it is that truly understands hers and these proposals, because they're the ones that look terribly confused right now. And it's only the ones that are sitting there looking like they understand every word that Mr. Yates shared with us are the ones that must not really understand this program. And I'm one of the ones that don't really fully understand this program. But it does appear that the three different approaches offer a range of cost distribution between the employer and the employee and a range of savings to the employer. And since the employer in this case are public entities and taxing districts and taxpayer funded, then they're the ones that are looking at the cost savings. It would be ultimately the taxpayer. And then I think we could probably argue about what is reasonable in terms of rate of cost shifting, whether the costs all shift to the employee and whether the necessity for cost savings justifies that cost shifting.
Senator, Dick, I got here a little bit late, but you mentioned a 10% reduction. Is that a 10% reduction in the earnings of retirement, a 10% reduction in the loss? What is
No, if I may, Mr. Chairman, Senator, the if you came in late, then you need to read.
Well, I think I've gone
my
through
cautions.
I think I've gone through some of this before this hearing, and I just wanted to know. My concern was during the the graduated part of it. The 10% reduction, just pick up from there. The assumed loss.
What I've assumed here, I mean, what you're talking about is what happens to member balances.
Member balances is what I'm talking about.
And I've just made some very simplifying assumptions in this presentation, and that is that they grow 8% per year.
Okay.
Now, I cautioned in the sense that if you're dealing with a variable account, you might have a big reduction in 1 year, and then things get more complicated. But I didn't want to introduce that complication at this point. So that we're just talking about the simplest possible case where member balances grow by 8% per year. Then what I said was, okay, let's assume that we have a change in mortality tables.
Okay.
And as a result of those changes, the factors, the actuarial equivalency factors, drop by 10%. So that's where the 10% reduction comes from.
Further questions? Hearing none, Mr. Yates, thank you very much for bringing the comparisons. The chair has not heard any communications from the employee faction that there's been any additional potential compromise or move toward compromise. I'm not hearing that there is a preferred version that meets somewhere in the middle between the bill that we had in draft form, Senate Bill 1021. And the employee's proposal, there's probably two at least other permutations. But I think what we'll do is just assume that there is no closure that we've heard of at this point in time in terms of the compromise. So we'll just go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1021, and we will move on to the other issues on our agenda. Without objection, public hearing is closed on Senate Bill 1021. We do need to open up brief hearings on the Senate bills that have been, or House bills that have been assigned to our committee to start the public record process. So I'm going to ask if there is anyone here that would like to come and offer testimony on House Bill 4059. And I believe we distributed sign-up sheets for that. Actually, if you could bring the sign-up sheets on 40, 51, 52, 56, and 59.
All those 50s.
Okay, great. Thank you. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 4059. Is there anyone here present who wishes to offer testimony on House Bill 4059? Paul, would you be willing to give the briefest of overview of what the bill accomplishes for the community's benefit?
Mr. Chair, House Bill 4059 is a special elections bill, and the way the package came over from the House, it contains two measures. One is HJR 80, and the other is House Bill 4051. The special election would be set for September 17th. And given the timelines involved, the bill itself does contain a financial impact statement that would go on the ballot.
Okay. And these are companion bills to HJR 80.
HJR 80 and House Bill 4051.
Okay. Colleagues, any questions of,
What do they put on the ballot to vote on? What issues?
Senator Trow, the two issues to vote on are the HJR 80, which is the Stability Fund measure. And that would be the first one. The second is, an increase in the cigarette tax, to $1.43 per pack.
Okay. Further questions? We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 4059. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 4056. And same thing, Mr. Warner, would you please give the committee a brief orientation on what the bill does?
Mr. Chair, House Bill 4056 is a direct companion of HJR 80. It is so-called backup financing if the measure is defeated. It does not take effect if HJR 80 passes in the special election. What it does is authorize the Treasurer to issue revenue bonds with a maximum duration of 15 years. They are to be used for a transfer to the state school fund. The financing of those bonds, they will be repaid out of master settlement agreement dollars beginning July 1, 2003.
Okay. We'll ask if there's any questions from the committee on House Bill 4056.
This would go into effect if the measure fails, is that it?
Correct.
Yeah, and then you'd have the backup financing with bonding.
Correct.
And that's automatic.
That's automatic. And the financing, though, is revenue bonds. It's not GO bonds. It's revenue bonds backed by the master settlement agreement. The model that this is based on is Senate Bill 832 from the regular session, the OHSU revenue bonds. Okay.
Okay. Further questions from the committee? Hearing and seeing none, is there anyone here present that wishes to offer testimony? No one signed up. Okay, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 4056. Paul, we have House Bill 4052A. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 4052A.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 4052A is the implementation bill for HJR 80. This is one of the differences between HJR 80 and Measure 13 that failed on the May primary ballot. Measure 13 did not have any implementing language. It was the Stability Fund was to become operational on April 30th, and the decision was made that the regular session would therefore be able to put some implementing language together. HR 80, however, doesn't say anything about an operational date, therefore it would be operational 30 days after it was passed, and this 4052 would come into play. And it essentially is the implementing language. It changes the statutes wherever there's a reference to the endowment fund, education endowment fund. It changes that to stability fund. The most substantive portion of the bill does give the treasurer flexibility in managing the Oregon Growth Account, in particular, in order to make the transfer to the state school fund of $180 million on May 1st.
Okay. Questions of Paul Warner from the committee? Is there anyone here present that wishes to offer testimony on House Bill 4052? Seeing no one, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 4052. We also have been assigned House Bill 4050, and is do you wish to have Dick Yates do the orientation, or do you want to do that, Paul?
I can just say simply, Mr. Chair, that 911 emergency communications tax as a sunset extension from 2004 to 2007 is what the bill does. Adds 3 years to the existing sunset.
Okay. Questions from the committee about House Bill 4050? Is there anyone here present that wishes to make commentary on House Bill 4050? If not, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 4050. Colleagues, if you haven't noticed, there's a theme to these bills. 4059 sets a procedure for statewide elections. 4056 authorizes issuance of revenue bonds. 4052 changes the endowment fund to the stability fund. 4050 extends a sunset date. So these are all implementation mechanisms that need to be added to the revenue issues or for the election question, or to issue revenue bonds. So our role in these four bills would be to create the mechanisms for implementation on a technical basis. Paul, that brings us to HCR 80, and we would, we're awaiting some amendments that would clean up some language that needs some attention from the original House Joint Resolution. I don't believe those amendments are ready yet. That's your understanding?
We do not have them, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So we will, I guess that concludes our business if we're not ready to act on HJR 80 today.
You want to recess?
I think what we'll do is recess until 4 o'clock, if that would be possible. Recess till 4 p.m. and await those amendments, and if they're available earlier, we will call earlier. So we are in recess until 4 p.m.
Will we have other business besides those amendments?
Senator, as far as I know, the only other bill that I think that we might have a possibility to work today would be the 911 sunset extension and authorization.
Okay.
So we are in recess until 4 p.m.
Open the hearing.
Thank you.